listening to the Lighthouse London podcast, a series of shows giving tips and advice for startup founders, product managers, and people navigating the ins and outs of the web. Welcome back to the Lighthouse London podcast. I'm Tom. Today we have another of our startup stories. Joining me is the CEO of Leaf, Gilbert Corrales.
Hi,
Tom. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So let's start off like we usually do with a bit of background about Leaf. Maybe you can tell us about what the app is, how it came to be, and your involvement in the company.
Sure. So I'm the CEO. I'm one of the co-founders. The company started off as an idea back in Costa Rica. We're all, you know, kind of from there. We moved to the UK about 2 years ago. We moved from Costa Rica to Newcastle.
Nice.
Following an opportunity. Yeah, we don't hear that a lot. But but no, I mean, it's been great. We follow an opportunity that came along from UKTI, the UK Trading Investment. And they had a program back in the day to track talent to the country. And, mm-hmm. you know, we were invited through that. And
nice. Yeah, how did that come about? How did that?
We met them, I think, at Google Campus. Like we came to London for a couple of days, and just working out of there, we met somebody, and you know, they asked us what we were working on. We told them music, and they were like, "Yeah, that's great. UK is, you know, home of music,
and yeah, definitely.
Would you be interested in moving here and set up here?" And long story short, 6 months later, we were, you know, packing our bags and, you know, like pretty much moving up here.
Was that an easy decision to make to move over?
It was from the point of view of the opportunity that it will open up for ourselves, right? I mean, at the time, we were just starting working on Leaf as an idea. And, you know, it was a lot of bureaucratic process to just get done with it. I mean, it took us 6 months that we pretty much did nothing other than, you know, do errands around, you know, us moving up here. But once we arrived, I mean, everything was amazing. So it was a great bet, you know, in hindsight that we did. And, you know, we were able to pair up with great partners in the country. We pretty much arrived to this country knowing no one. Wow. And I believe that, you know, in these 2 years, we've been able to build a very comprehensive network of people around us who has helped us, you know, be where we are.
Cool. So let's talk about Leaf a bit. Can you tell us what it is, what it does?
Yeah. So there is a difference between, you know, Leaf the product that as exists today and what Leaf as a company is. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to, you know, kind of like the way we do things. So we take a very hypothesis approach to things and testing hypothesis. So if you go to the App Store and download Leaf at the moment, what you will get is a great experience to consume music through videos, and that's kind of like what you get, a highly curated experience, beautiful and simple.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I've tried it out. It's great.
Cool. And the way we started from that is because we wanted to test whether there was appetite for yet another music app. Mm-hmm. You have Apple and Spotify and Deezer and SoundCloud. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to try it is, you know, if we were to build a music app, built around music videos with a stick. I mean, there is Bevo and there's been others, right? But you've never seen stickiness around some of those. Yet YouTube is the biggest music streaming service in the world,
of
right?
Of course, yeah.
In use, especially, you know, pretty much by everybody, but a lot of the kind of like post-millennial generation, it's their main, you know, content consumption place. So we kind of went that route and we started testing around that. And yeah, I mean, it's grown to, you know, million plus downloads in a very quickly fashion. We have currently, you know, about 300 monthly active users, over 45,000 people use it on a daily basis. So it's it's been very rewarding, very fast.
Yeah,
it proved some of the hypothesis. It also has served as a test bed for new ideas.
Yep.
And that's how we treat it. And, you know, it is evolving towards that, you know, from that, I guess.
So how did the company come about? Who were the co-founders and where did the idea spark from?
There were four co-founders, and it's actually like two families. So it's me and my wife and other two guys who happen to be cousins among themselves. And originally, we get connected because they've been thinking with ideas around music. They had very vast experience engaging tech people. They're not tech people. Mm-hmm. And then through common friends, we kind of got connected, and I started mentoring them a little bit. That time I was, you know, me and my wife, we were based in Chicago. And it, something unique happened where even though they were not tech, you know, they were doing advancements, and, you know, even though they had some very bad experiences engaging tech people, you know, they lost mm-hmm. some money in the middle. And, you know, when you're not tech and you hire tech, I mean, unless it's people you can trust, you most of the time might get, you know,
that's a really, really hard thing to do. Yeah, very,
it
very
is.
Difficult.
So after me and my wife, we were done in Chicago with a project we were working there, we moved back to Costa Rica, and we kind of got together and we said, you know, what if we give it a shot at us working together? So me and my wife, we already made the decision that we wanted to take about a year sabbatical mm-hmm. from work and, you know, just focus on and then something on our own. And so what we did is we said, okay, let's try it for a month. Let's give it a month a try. And then we turned half of our house into an office. And then we told them, you know, if you come for a month, you know, let's see what can come out of it. And so we started, you know, kind of rapidly, you know, coming up with ideas. We knew we wanted to do something around music.
And that was the sole thing you had.
Yeah, we love music. And we also knew that something had to change in the immediate future for artists, because more and more it was becoming evident that they were going to stop making money out of music. Mm-hmm. It was becoming more and more evident that the relationship between fans and artists was getting strange. I mean, yeah. It's outsourced to social media, and it's really not your fans. I mean, they're your followers, but what that means? How can you reach them? How do you know who's the most engaged ones? So we saw an opportunity there, and, you know, and we thought, well, I mean, somebody will have to fix it. Might as well we fix it, mm-hmm. you know, and what that looks like.
Sure.
And that's how kind of how we went in, you know, thinking, you know, if somebody's to fix the music industry as a business, mm-hmm. per se, right?
Yeah.
Outside of the big labels, right? Because they have their own very specific business model. But more and more, even that is shrinking from the point of view, not of money, but from the point of view of artists yeah. inside there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of publications lately about how, you know, like the top 40s in the charts, you know, have become stagnant because,
yeah.
you know, they don't happen to move. It's pretty much the very same artist, just recycling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, major labels are only investing in massive, sure things, and the kind of the smaller ones aren't getting a look.
Yeah,
at
I mean, and it's understandable why they do mm-hmm. it, right? Because it's becoming more difficult to actually, you know, break artists and becoming more difficult to actually make the most out of it.
The money needed to get you top 40 is huge. The investment's massive, and you
yeah.
do that on something you
and about. You have, you know, some luminary that will come here and there, but I mean it's the exception to the rule rather than the rule
sure.
itself, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where we came from, and so we started with this product, you know, trying to reach a completely different demographic than, you know, products like Spotify or Apple were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to know, you know, what their consumption habits will be and whether there will be space to, you know, to kind of get into this, you know, more social aspect of it. I mean, mm-hmm. music is a very visceral social experience.
Definitely.
And yet all of the products that we see today, they're very siloed, right? I mean, they're very disconnected. And so that's kind of like what we did, you know, taking a very, you know, test-driven, hypothesis-driven
mm-hmm.
Approach to building Leaf. And yeah, I mean, we've been lucky that it has worked.
That's cool. Very good. So I'm very intrigued by this first month idea. What did that look like when you guys started working together? How did you start the ball rolling?
It's interesting. So I'm not going to say brainstorming approach, but it was mm-hmm. more about, you know, figuring out what a minimal viable product could look like.
Yep.
On the two ends, you know, for the artist side and for the fan side.
Mm-hmm.
So very rapidly, we put a website together, we launched it, and we started getting, you know, very organically emails from people from within the music industry,
sure.
labels and artist management houses and, you know, mm-hmm. even artists themselves. And so like within 6 weeks, we had about 500 artists on board.
Cool.
And we thought, well, that's probably not going to be where the issue is, right? Because we didn't have a product, right? We only had a website,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, with a contact us, you
yeah,
know, thing
yeah.
in it. And, like, and, you know, the basics of what we wanted to build. And when you have, say, 500 artists on board, or 1,000, or even 10,000, what does that mean? You know, like, where do you go from that? And then, you know, we started asking that question ourselves. And, you know, we started talking, engaging these artists, and trying to understand where the pain points were. And then we thought, what if we kind of, like, give it the other route, and, you know, can we build something that attracts fans and can retain fans? Kind of went that route. And then, you know, we got our first, you know, 10,000 users very quickly, or 10,000 downloads, not users, but 10,000 downloads, you know, rather quickly, like within probably, I don't know, 6-10 weeks.
Wow.
So, and then we started seeing people using the app. And, you know, one of the, in hindsight, one of the mistakes that we did is that we waited too long to launch a product. Me and my wife, we come from agency worlds. And when you come from agency worlds, I mean, you want things to be perfect, or as close as perfect, right? Because you feel like, you know, or at least you have in your mind, like, what are my mates going to say about it? You know, what are, you know, and you have to remember, right? I mean, in my personal case, right, most of my previous projects that I work with, right, the budgets I had available to me were, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of pounds, right? When you have a budget of, say, 300,000 pounds for a two-month project, right? Of course, the expectation is that it got to be perfect.
It's going to be pretty polished,
But you forget about that, right? And you forget that the fact that, you know, on those projects, you know, those projects are made of, you know, 10, 12 people, right?
Yeah.
Whereas here, it was only 4 people, out of which only 2 knew how to code. The other 2 had no experience in tech. And so we, you know, we kept the bar very high.
Yeah.
And thinking that the product had to look like a, you know, like a $1 million project.
Yeah.
When it actually was made, you know, for free, but just 4 people in a room.
So how long was that initial product development cycle then?
Longer than it should have been.
Right.
But that's kind of like around the timing where we moved to UK.
Okay, cool.
One of the first things that the guys at Ignite, because part of the program meant that, you know, we were partnered up with an accelerator of sorts in the country. And that's why we ended up choosing Newcastle, because we had the chance to choose pretty much everywhere in the country. And so Paul and Tristan, who, you know, happened to be the directors of the Ignite program in Newcastle, you know, came to a point, you know, like I think like three, four weeks into a program and say, you know, I don't want to see you guys here next week if you guys haven't launched the product. So do whatever you have to do, but, you know, within the next 7 days, the product has to be launched and being used by users. And so...
Good advice.
Yeah, and it was not in those words. It was like a very... in a very Paul Smith, you know, way of saying things, for those who know him. Yeah, and we took that, you know, to heart, and we said, like, fuck it. We really need to do it, you know? Yeah. And so we went and did it, and, you know, after the second week, you know, we had our first 1,000 users using it. And, you know, the engagement was great, and we thought, wow, I mean, like, we've been so worried, and to be honest, like, probably none of our mates are using the app because, you know, like, we didn't put it on Facebook or anything, right? And then we're like, you know, like, we shouldn't care about it, because at the end of the day, they're not the ones building this, right? I mean, they're not the ones who give up, you know, their good salaries and everything to start building this. And at the end of the day, you know, who should we care about is, you know, who our target market is and who are we building this for, you know?
I think that's quite a common thing that we see from people quite a lot. They care that their mates down the pub will think it's rubbish, but it's not important, right? I mean, it's not who your customer is.
I mean, and there is something interesting that we learned later on is that, you know, after 90 days, you've lost the great majority of your users, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're Facebook or Instagram, right? I mean, the churn that apps see, especially at the beginning, is so high that, you know, most likely within the within the 90 days of you, if somebody downloading the app, I mean, chances are they're not using the app.
Yeah.
So which means is that, so who cares? You know, then that means that it gives you more freedom, you know, in terms of testing and validating things. And I mean, as the app grows, of course, that's very different, right?
Yeah.
But in the very early days, right, the churn is very high, which you actually should use into your advantage rather than worrying about it. So since people are churning, it means that you have more freedom about, you know, changing things radically.
Yeah.
That nobody's going to care, right? Yeah, because what you're trying to do is, you know, finding that sweet spot that, you know, where people start churning less.
But sure.
You should not go in thinking that that first iteration, you know, is actually the best. I mean, I'm sure, like, even, you know, Facebook or, you know, Instagram and, you know, like, all these early stage companies. I mean, you remember Twitter, right? I mean, there was the whole, you know, fail whale thing. I mean, it went on for years, right? It was not even, like, months, right?
And
people
well,
stayed,
yeah,
right?
So,
So it doesn't mean that you'll have to be like Twitter. I mean, it means that, you know, you have to be more open, more approachable. And, you know, I think after that, after we did that and we started seeing people coming back, we thought, well, actually, it's not bad. And so we kind of changed our approach to things. And so we took approach more of testing and validating and not being worried about, you know, throwing stuff off, even mm-hmm. though, you know, you invested a lot of time building it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, what you're doing is validating stuff. And, you know, and you should come into things, you know, thinking that, you know, sometimes the answers to those validations is that it actually doesn't work. And
yeah.
then you have to note when to let it go, move it, remove it, and then, you know, use that knowledge to get you closer to what the end result should
definitely.
Be.
Definitely. It's really refreshing to hear that, because a lot of people we speak to are very tied to their idea, aren't willing to kind of embrace the notion that what they've thought of might not be right. And they're always very worried that also if they put it out and they get 1,000 people and they think that those 1,000 people are going to be there forever, when you're completely correct that they will probably not be there in a month or two. So very, very good to see you doing that.
We are running a one-off event for entrepreneurs and startups, and you're invited. Join us on the 21st of September at Treehouse London in Clerkenwell for an evening of interactive info-packed talks with our team of startup specialists. We'll be discussing prototyping, market validation, business accelerators, and much more, followed by a Q&A for anyone wanting to get going with their business. There's free booze, of course. Read more and grab a free ticket at wearelighthouse.com/crashcourse. See you there.
How do you approach testing then?
So we try to measure everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an internal motto in the company that, you know, those things that you cannot measure cannot be improved.
Mm-hmm.
And those things that cannot be improved are sometimes not even worth doing.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's you have to test the stuff that you do, right? And there are always going to be certain things that just have to be there mm-hmm. in a way. But we try to minimize those as much as possible. So we measure everything, so through analytics and stuff like that.
Got it.
You know, we do a lot of cohort analysis. You know, mm-hmm. we try to understand, you know, whether, you know, the things that we wanted our users to do, are they doing it? Why not? You know.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, sometimes we just put features, you know, a small feature out there just as a test and to see mm-hmm. what happens. Sometimes we can validate ideas within 48 hours.
Wow.
And, you know, we have a very good communication to our users. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's just about prompting them to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And if we see, you know, based on the response, then, you know, that somehow validates, you know, some of our assumptions. And
so when you're pushing out a new feature, is it trying to do it at the least possible cost or time as possible? Or
I mean, sometimes as much as you can get away with, right? I mean, there are certain features that do take a lot
yeah.
of investment, but we try to, you know, what is the quickest way that you can validate something?
Mm-hmm.
Once you validate it, then you can justify
the extra spend,
the extra yeah. investment yeah. In the product. You know, we wanted to, you know, see whether people were open to speak, you know,
mm-hmm.
like talk and use the product as a social thing. That was kind of like the next step that we wanted to do. So we put a very basic, you know, chat bubble in a corner of the app. And it was more about, you know, like we treat it as a kind of support channel of sorts, right? And then just to understand, you know, if people had questions or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, in itself, it started getting a life on its own. And then it became Leafy and it became a personal assistant of sorts that recommended music. But then it evolved into like being just your mate there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, like people will come and say, hey, Leafy, you know, good morning, you know, high five. You know, it's like, well, Leafy, I'm just going to bed. You know, you have some good tunes there. Or, you know, to cases where, you know, a kid in Netherlands, you know, with cancer, and, you know, he will engage with us, tell us about the treatment, tell us about, you know, how things were going. A kid in Chile last year after the earthquake, you know, and telling us, you know, how, you know, his little town got brought down. And, you know, so it's, and more than that, you know, like people saying, you know, I'm sad, I just broke up with my boyfriend, you know, like this, you know, or like people hitting us on us and how you doing, you know, kind of thing. But it's been interesting, right? I mean, in those things, I mean, we that feature, it took us maybe 4 hours to implement. Yeah.
And you didn't really know where it would end up.
And we didn't know where it was going to go. I mean, and it has evolved from where it started. It has allowed us to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And right now we're investing heavily on a whole, you know, social, the first part of the social thing that we're launching, you know, in just a few weeks. And we did that as well with growth and our marketing approach. So when we started Leave, the team didn't have any kind of experience about launching apps, even though me and my wife, we came in with a lot of experience about building products used by millions of people around the world. Mm-hmm. We have never launched the app, right? I mean, we were in the tech team.
Sure.
And so we took a very, you know, again, very test-driven approach to advertising. And Melvin, one of the co-founders, he just took on the task of learning how to grow an app and how do you launch an app and how do you do, you know, a lot of this stuff. And that's, you know, that's kind of how it went, you know.
It's great. I mean, there's a lot out there that you can learn this stuff these days. So there's loads to read. And if you take it all in and adopting that kind of test-driven process, you can achieve it. And you guys have proved it.
Yeah, I mean, and even like on marketing, you know, like we've met with, you know, the head of Twitter ads and, you know, people within Facebook and people in other places. And when they get to see, you know, even our cost of acquisition, which is ridiculously low, they're like, how do you do this? You know, and they're like, well, we test, you know, and we test and we do things. And, you know, nowadays, at any given point in time, you know, we're running maybe 34,000 different ads, you know, at a time.
Wow.
And, you know, that gives us, you know, it's not an A/B testing of sorts, it's an A/B whatever, 34,000 tests that give us, you know, a lot of insight about, you know, what do, you know, females 13 to 18 in Latin America, you know, like to engage with versus, you know, the same kind of demographic, say, in the US or in Eastern Europe or in Southeast Asia. And, you know, so it's very interesting, you know, and we come to this by way of testing, you know, by way of hypothesizing and, you know, and coming to those terms.
That's amazing. What would you say are kind of like the biggest surprises as to how the app has changed over time that you weren't expecting?
Something that is interesting is the fact that we haven't changed our, you know, the vision and mission of the company through all this testing. If anything, it has allowed us to continue to validate certain points. It has allowed us to refine certain thoughts. The fact, you know, probably the most surprising fact is how open people are to engage with products. And, you know, like Leafy is an example of that. I mean, some conversations there are deeply personal. And, you know, we make Leafy a little cute sloth. It's funny, you know, like we're supposed to be living in probably one of the most connected times in our lives or in history of the humanity. And yet, you know, there is a big number of persons that feels, you know, disconnected, you know?
Definitely, yeah.
And so, you know, and we can see it, right? I mean, the fact that now, you know, Tinder has replaced, you know, the way we, you know, we meet people for whatever reasons, right? And the fact that, you know, there are a lot of this, I mean, it just shows that while, you know, we're most connected, we're also the most disconnected. So
definitely, and there's a lot of channels, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're connecting with people, you know.
Yeah, and so we're trying, you know, to take that into account and to heart, you know, when as we build in this next social aspect of Leave, you know, how can we build something that, you know, utilizes music to connect people more, you know, in the real sense.
Yeah.
Right? And then how can we the stage after that is how we allowed people to find, you know, their own niches of sorts, you know, like their own tribes, and how, you know, I think music is very powerful because it defines who you are in a very
absolutely
clear way, you know,
yeah, 100%.
And so, and then, you know, and how we use those tools to help artists more effective in their communication with their fans.
Mm-hmm.
But
How's the reaction been from artists to what you're doing? Because you, I mean, you've chatted to them early on. Are you still involved in talking to them?
We're actually resuming that part
right
now. Just now. I mean, because we've gone into this consumer part and we've learned a lot. And mm-hmm. now, based on what we've learned, we're actually now incrementally introducing the artists
cool.
into the whole equation. And actually, you know, it makes it to a more integral way, you know, because it's about, you know, knowing how do you bring them on into the journey.
Yeah.
So that's been very interesting, you know.
Cool. So I suppose one question I always like to ask people who do music stuff, I'm a massive music fan and I have loads of friends who are musicians and all that kind of stuff. It's hard to make money out of music, right?
So it is.
How do you do it?
That's part of the stuff that we're you know, kind of discovering
mm-hmm.
ourselves. You know, currently the way to make money out of music is playing live, right? It's live shows.
Yeah, of course.
But there is so much opportunity out there, right? I mean, from micropayments to, you know, having and facilitating, you know, transactions, it's interesting, right? Like Justin Bieber's website. You know, Justin Bieber is at the middle of a tour at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and his store and his website has been down for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
How can you know,
reconcile
something like that, right? I mean, the biggest artist in the world at the moment
has
his store. You know, the one way to make
think that would be fixed in
ancillary
minutes, right?
money, you know, and yet it's been down for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
So there are a lot of, you know, of opportunities to make money out of. I mean, but they all start by getting access to the fan.
Yeah.
They all start by having a direct channel to the fan.
Definitely.
And knowing who your core fan base is, you know, I think there's been great artists who have been able to monetize their fans. You know, Dave Matthews Band, it's an example of that, right? If you look back in the day, you know, Grateful Dead were great at monetizing their fans, right? Mm-hmm. But it comes with effort, right? I mean, the fact that, you know, the Grateful Dead, and I think, you know, the Grateful Dead and Dave Matthews Band has a very commonalities and sorts. I mean, they can put on 4 shows in a row in the same city and all 4 shows are going to be different,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know that, you know, they're such a talented musicians that they can afford doing those things, right?
Yeah.
It has such a core, you know.
Well, they're quite a niche offering, aren't they, in many ways, and the very devoted fans.
I mean,
they go to every show as
well. Yeah, but
right?
I mean, if you take away all the top 40 stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of the music today is very niche.
Yeah.
You know, from grime to EDM to, you know, it's what we're living is in a world of niches, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to figure out a way that you can tap on your own niche, you know, figuring out who those are, you know, who, and then, you know, get the best tool to talk to them directly, you know, and that's kind of like what we're building towards. I mean, building a network of highly, you know, engage niches. That's what Leaf is.
It's interesting to see how social networks and stuff has changed music. I mean, there is that direct connection of people and their favorite band now or favorite artist or whatever it is. And some people do it well, some people do it appallingly. But, you know, the ones who do it well, you know, they'll be around for longer years.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, right? I mean, you know, going back to the Justin Bieber case, you know, the fact that, you know, he releases, you know, song after song after song, you know, I mean, you have to do it in order to remain relevant, right? Especially if you're an artist of that size. When you're a smaller artist, I mean, I think you can get away with, you know, a more authentic approach,
mm-hmm.
you know, to fans and stuff like that. But you have to give them access, right? And it's the way you engage them and keep them engaged, I think is the important bit.
Absolutely. So in terms of the company, I mean, how many people are you now?
So we've grown in the last year to 8.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still quite small
cool.
for all this kind of stuff
that
we get to produce.
Lean.
And it's been, you know, like part of why we've been successful is because we're lean.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, nonetheless, we're expanding the team, especially on the tech side. So we went from being just me and my wife coding to now have, you know, like 2 other people in the team, and, you know, we're going to have expanding, you know, that a little bit further, as well as, you know, potentially bringing a couple of UX guys.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, in the product stuff.
Nice.
You know, which is where
big focus on that still. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So what's next? What's the grand plan for the next year, 2 years?
We're doing it. I mean, it's we're integrating, you know, more services. We're bringing Spotify on board. You know,
cool.
Deezer on board, Apple Music on board.
I should say it's based around YouTube at the moment, right?
Yeah, right now it's YouTube. I mean, because that was like the initial test. Now that it is proven, you know, so then we're integrating the other ones. There's more. You know, there is a whole use case around, you know, providing, you know, engagement across the different services, and mm-hmm. especially, you know, allowing people to communicate on top of that.
How have you found approaching? I mean, was there any kind of problems integrating something like YouTube and running off their platform from Google or anyone like that?
I mean, it's difficult from a point of view that it's not an easy technology task. It's
right.
it's easy from a point of view that, you know, it's an open API and everything.
Yeah.
You just have to make sure that you remain within the terms and conditions of the API, which they change. So you have to make sure that they use the, you know, stay on top of that. Integrating Deezer and Spotify and Apple, you know, I mean, these are, you know, it's in a very similar fashion, right? I mean, mm-hmm. their APIs are similar in the point of view that, you know, it's you play content, right? But when you're doing video, right, I mean, the bar is so high when you have, like, Facebook video and you have mm-hmm. Twitter video and you have YouTube that, you know, if you want people to use your product, then you have to build, you know, playing experience that is on par with those platforms, that's what people get to expect. They don't care whether it is 100 engineers behind a product or if it is just two.
Mm.
They just expect that kind of quality of product.
Definitely,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's difficult from a standpoint, like creating a good playing experience
mm-hmm.
does take time. There is still a lot of, you know, room for improvement on ours, but we believe that, you know, that's actually, you know, quite good.
But there'll always be stuff that can be improved.
There
right?
is always going to be stuff, yeah. I mean, and, you know, when you build on third-party, you know, infrastructure as well, I mean, you have to, you know, make sure that, you know, that you can play around, you know, with what's provided, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of the, you know, it's part of the challenge, because where we believe that Leaf can add value, it's not on the content distribution side, but it's more about on the content engagement side
mm-hmm.
or on the engagement of fans and the engagement of people. And that's kind of like where we are focusing on.
Cool.
So, it's been fun, you know, and remains been a lot of fun. And we're very excited kind of like, you know, where it's going. I mean, we have very engaged users pretty much in every single country in the world.
Yep.
And we're just going to continue growing that. We're going to be focusing on certain regions where we see opportunity in terms of business, you know, and mm-hmm. that. But yeah, so that's kind of like where we are.
It's awesome. Exciting times.
Yeah,
definitely. That's great. Well, thanks for taking the time to fill us in.
Thank
really
you,
good to chat to you. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find Leaf?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Samik, S-A-M-I-Q.
Cool.
Or Leaf FM on Twitter as well, awesome. And Leaf.fm on the web. And
awesome.
You can look it up on the Google App Store. Or
yeah, get in the App Store and download it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I've tried it out.
Yeah,
I'm going to be on it again.
Yeah. All right. Cheers.
Cool. Nice one. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I hope you enjoyed. Please do leave us a rating if you've liked the show. Head out to the website, wearelighthouse.com, to check more content. Plenty more podcasts and blog posts up there. Catch you all next time. Thank you. If you want to listen to more great podcasts, read awesome content, or learn a bit more about Lighthouse London, then head over to wearelighthouse.com. For entrepreneurs who need a hand getting an exciting new business idea off the ground, or people who want some help solving complex problems online, drop us an email at hello@wearelighthouse.com, or find us on Twitter using @wearelighthouse. If you like what you've heard, then subscribe to get all the latest insights the day they're released. All details are on the website, or search and rate on iTunes.